From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, it is not only the passing of a president, but of an era. When George H.W. Bush passed away Friday night at the age of 94, he was the last president of the World War II generation. While politics are usually set aside to celebrate the memory of our nation's leaders, this, unfortunately, is a new era where partisanship knows no limits, not even the grave. Ambassador Ken Blackwell, a member of the George H.W. Bush administration, joins me later here on Washington Watch. Also, a just-released study by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom is raising a serious warning about the continued inflammatory content of textbooks for middle and high school students, which are published by Saudi Arabia and distributed around the world. My fellow Commissioner Christina Arriaga joins me in just a moment. And it's been almost a month since Asia Bibi, a Pakistani Christian who spent 8 years on death row after being convicted of blasphemy, had her conviction overturned by Pakistan's Supreme Court. But her life is in just as much danger now as when she faced the death penalty from the state because of her Christian faith. Former USERF Commissioner Cliff May is here on that story. Also, we'll be taking your phone calls a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Look, let me remind you, registration for the Christian Heritage Tour coming up in March is underway. Now, this is the Family Research Council's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit. Going to be held in Washington May the 28th through the 31st. Along with the exceptional cuisine and fellowship with like-minded travelers, you'll also enjoy five-star accommodations at the Trump International Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue. And as always, every aspect of this travel experience will be first-rate, thanks to our longtime travel partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. To find out how you can be a part of this, you won't want to miss it. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, or go to InspirationCruises.com/FRDC. All right, in the wake of 9/11, a common thread was revealed throughout the radicalized Muslim world: Saudi Arabia textbooks for middle and high school students. Now, despite repeated claims by Saudi officials that the inflammatory content was being removed, that they were revising these textbooks, a just-released study from the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom concludes that the Saudi-published textbooks that are shipped around the world for use in Islamic schools have actually reverted backwards toward more inflammatory content and material advocating intolerance and violence. Joining me now is Christina Arriaga, a former commissioner, a fellow commissioner, I should say, on the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. Christina, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tony.
Now, Christine, I know that you have tracked this for some time, because this is not the first time that the commission has taken up this issue of the textbooks in Saudi Arabia. But this is a problem that really the West has focused on since 9/11, when that connection was made. But we're not seeing much progress coming from Saudi Arabia when it comes to the content of these textbooks.
No, we have not. For the last 15 years, the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom has been monitoring this issue. As you know, during 9/11, the vast majority of the extremists that killed so many of our people were indeed from Saudi Arabia. So our ally, Saudi Arabia, keeps saying that they're going to remove this extremist talk from their textbooks. But these books are still used in many countries, including the United States. In 2008, the commission uncovered a school in Virginia was still using these books.
Now, the content, give our listeners some idea of the type of content we're talking about in these textbooks.
The content is extremely inflammatory. It's false. Let me give you a couple of things that this year's book still say, and these are 22 books that are used currently in Saudi Arabia in middle schools and high school. One of the hadiths that he quotes is, hitting your wife is only permitted when necessary. In terms of religious freedom issues, anyone who makes fun of God, his verses, or his prophet is an apostate. No excuse is acceptable from him, regardless of whether he repents or is killed for infidelity. This precise hadith was used a few years ago in Nigeria against a Christian teacher who confiscated a copy of the Quran from a student. He ran out of the classroom saying that the teacher had disrespected the Quran, and as a result, there was a riot, and more than 20 Christians were killed in that village, and two churches at least were destroyed. These passages are found all over Africa, in the United Kingdom, in Pakistan. In fact, in 2010, in England, 15-year-olds who attended over 40 private Muslim schools were given diagrams on how to cut the hands of individuals who broke Sharia law by saying something like, Muhammad is not the last prophet.
This, at the time when we're trying to see dispelling or a kind of a dialing back of this radical Islamic thought, we see Saudi Arabia continuing to publish this material, and it's not just in Saudi Arabia. In fact, going back to 2015, the first American diplomat to serve as an envoy to Muslim communities around the world, Farah Bandeth, she said when she traveled about 80 different countries, she concluded that these textbooks from Saudi, the influence that they were bringing to these countries, was destroying the Islamic, the tolerant Islamic tradition. So not only is this, this is actually stamping out the more moderate voices that could bring about a common decency that would allow us to work together across these religious lines.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the report that USERF just issued found, reviewed 3,000 pages of text, and they only found two instances that where there was an encouragement of religious tolerance. What makes all of this even worse, if we could say that, is that the total number of books translated into Arabic in the last 1,000 years is fewer than those translated into Spanish every year. What this means is that these kids in Saudi Arabia and all over the world don't have other textbooks that they're reading, and they don't read for leisure. So the only thing they're getting is this very damaging extremist propaganda. And it is infuriating. I was in Saudi Arabia in 2017, and I met with the Ministry of Education, and USERF again presented all of these extremist texts, and the government in Saudi Arabia assured us that they were on the problem and they were going to get rid of these books. And yet, once again, we at USERF find that they're still using the same textbooks and distributing them all over the world.
Yeah, and Christina, what is so alarming about the report, this report from USERF that was just released, is not only has that intolerant content continued, but according to this latest analysis of these textbooks in the current school year, is that they have reverted back. They had made some progress in moderating, but they reverted back to some earlier very intolerant, insightful language. So it looks like we're moving backwards.
Yes, and the textbooks are very specific about Jews and Christians. So, for instance, in the textbooks, this hatred for Jews and Christians, we were told by the Saudis, had been removed, and yet just in the latest report, we see there's no satisfying the Jews and the Christians except by disbelieving in Islam and following their faith. So you have, in Saudi Arabia alone, 33,000 public schools with 6 million students reading this every year. 200,000 of the students come to the United States every year under a Saudi education program. And all of these books, again, have been found in Algeria, Austria, China, in France, Indonesia, in Somalia, in Tanzania, in Thailand, and the United Kingdom. And we at USERF have seen also that the older versions of the books that contain even more extremist language, are still using in all of these impoverished countries mm-hmm. that are breeding large numbers of terrorists.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Christina Arriaga, one of my fellow commissioners on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, joins me in this first segment discussing a just-released report from the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, a survey of the 2017-2018 Saudi middle and high school textbooks, which shows that they've actually backslidden when it comes to the intolerant material in these textbooks. And it's interesting, you go back historically, Saudi was really funneling a lot of these textbooks into Afghanistan in the 90s, leading to kind of the radicalizing, not that they really needed the Taliban. But as you're pointing out, Christine, a lot of these, Saudi is a wealthy company, being fueled by the oil profits coming from the West. And they've used that to build madrasas and provide these textbooks to a lot of other Islamic countries that are very poor and impoverished because they didn't have the riches of oil. And so they have a huge influence on the Islamic world through these textbooks.
Oh, absolutely. I was just in Nigeria last month, for instance, where the entire northern part of the country is dominated by Sharia law and by Muslim schools. Over 60% of girls get married before the age of 15. Polygamy is practiced in the north and allowed and encouraged by Sharia, up to 4 wives per man. And the schools are unfortunately mostly run by madrasas. In other words, these are places where there is nothing but a study of the Quran, and the Quran is memorized. And, of course, the textbooks they have are supported and paid for by the Wahhabis in the Saudi government. As everyone knows, the northern part of Nigeria is the cradle of Boko Haram, a violent extremist group. So one has to see what the connection is here.
And many of these countries are actually raising this issue. I've heard it as I've met with some of these officials of Islamic countries that have said, we want to kind of keep out these Saudi textbooks because they're radicalizing some of our young people, and we're concerned about it. So this is a problem that many countries are asking help for from the United States.
And from Saudi Arabia, it would be very easy for Saudi Arabia, which has a lot of oil money, to recall those books and pay those schools to return those books. And they haven't made the effort. Our own U.S. Ambassador Large for International Religious Freedom, Ambassador Brownback, has called out Saudi Arabia several times for not recognizing the right of non-Muslims to practice their religion in public. So this has to be resolved. And thank you so much for educating the public on this.
Well, Christina, as always, great to have you on the program, and look forward to seeing you at our next commission meeting coming up here shortly.
See you soon, Tony. Thanks.
All right, Christina Arriaga. We're going to talk more about this. This is a big issue, especially right now when we see what's happening with Saudi Arabia. All right, coming up next, evangelical Christians are urging the Trump administration to help Asiya Bibi, a Pakistani Christian woman who was recently cleared of blasphemy charges by the country's top court, but has not been allowed to leave Pakistan. We're going to talk with Cliff May, founder of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, next.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, known as SOCE, claiming that they are fraudulent, ineffective, and harmful. But are they? LGBT activists claim that sexual orientation is immutable and can't be changed by therapy or counseling. They also claim that people who attempt to change their sexual orientation end up more depressed and suicidal. As it turns out, studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are in fact very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. For a thorough analysis of all the major studies done on the effectiveness of SOCE, visit frc.org/SOCE. Again, that's frc.org/SOCE.
Are you ready to take a stand? Now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just a tap of the screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Merry Christmas. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. All right, just over 8 years ago, Asiya Bibi, a Pakistani Christian woman, was prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced to be hanged on the charge of blasphemy. Now, even though Pakistan's Supreme Court has overturned her conviction on grounds of insufficient evidence, she remains in the country, essentially imprisoned in protective custody, still fearing for her life. Joining us now is Cliff May, founder and president of Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a nonpartisan policy institute focusing on national security, which was created immediately following the 9/11 attacks on the United States. He is also a former commissioner with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Cliff, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
Hey, I saw your piece recently that you wrote on Mrs. Bibi, and first, I mean, I know our listeners know her current situation. She was convicted of blasphemy, was facing death. The high court overturned that. She's now still kind of in limbo because she's being held for her own safety because there are radicals who want to kill her. So there's her family's applied for asylum in Britain, in Canada, and the United States. But before we get to that, let's step back just a minute. And explain to our listeners what happened, why she is in this situation.
Well, you know, to really understand the situation, you've got to go back to 1947, when Pakistan was created so that Indian Muslims could have a country of their own. And in two areas in particular where the majority population were Muslims, you ended up with Pakistan, even though today there are actually more Muslims still in India than there are in Pakistan. And East Pakistan became Bangladesh. That's another story of how, and it's actually a terrible story. When Pakistan was created, about a quarter of its population were minorities, Christians, Sikhs, Hindus, Ahmadis, Parsis, and others. Over the time, the persecution of minorities became worse and worse. We're probably down to about 3% minorities now. Those who can leave do leave. But people like Asiya Bibi was a poor woman living in an agricultural community. She had no way to leave. And then I think people know pretty much the story. She was asked on a hot day to bring some water to some Muslim women. when she did, one of the women said, "I can't drink from that. It's been touched into those hands or lips. We don't know which. It's unclean." She evidently took offense at that, as one might, said something to the effect that Jesus died for our sins. What did Mohammed ever do for mankind? The women were outraged. They went to the authorities. She was arrested. She was tried. She was convicted of blasphemy. She was sentenced to death and spent 8 years on death row. And important to say, there were Pakistanis, including the governor of Punjab, who came to her defense, went to see her, think the blasphemy laws are very wrong. The gentleman I'm speaking of was shot to death by his own police guard, who said, "I have to do it. I'm a slave of Mohammed, and he is protecting a blasphemer."
Cliff, how important has the international community in its advocacy for Asiya Bibi, how important has that been in this process?
Well, the international community has done very little, as I would say at this point. The UN hasn't done much. The UK, because Pakistan used to be part of India and India was part of the British Empire, she has asked for asylum there. The British did not give it to her. I assume they're afraid of the jihadists and Islamists within their own population who would be upset by that. I have been told by officials in the U.S. government that they are working on solving this problem and that even that they're close to it, but they have not done so. I was given the impression that it would be not. I've asked in the column you're talking about, which you wrote almost a month ago, I suggested very strongly that President Trump offer her asylum. There are problems with doing that, absolutely. I can imagine that people at our embassy in Islamabad would need to stay indoors for a few months and let until things passed over because there would be protests. But this is a clear case for asylum, and particularly at a time when we got these so-called caravans of so-called migrants coming up from the various failing states in Central America and saying, "Well, we need asylum. We need asylum." Here's a real case of asylum, very clear. She's a Christian. She spoke. She said something that should not result in prosecution, much less a death sentence. She has been acquitted by the Pakistani Supreme Court, and yet her life is still in danger if she stays there. This is a clear case, and I think it would be both right and honorable and useful for the president to say, when we see a real case of asylum, of course we grant asylum.
Yeah, that's an extremely good point, because when you're looking for asylum, it's because your state is either prosecuting you, which they did in this case, or it can't protect you, which it can't do in this case either. Because if she's released,
yes,
the likelihood of her dying is very high. And that's why they're keeping her
high
in that protective custody. I mean, this does not resolve itself on its own, does it?
No, there's no way it's going to resolve itself on her own. As you say, if the government says, "Okay, you're no longer no longer giving you protective custody," she's a poor woman. She goes back home. Mobs will kill her. Her children are staying with a guardian. He said, "We are under constant threat. Our house has been fired upon. We're very frightened here. The family needs to leave. Pakistan is, unfortunately, sadly, I've been to Pakistan many times, but it has become over the years increasingly Islamist and increasingly intolerant. Now, there are many wonderful Pakistanis who disagree, and there are several who have given their lives, who have lost their lives, defending tolerance and defending Asiya Bibi. That's very important to say.
Right.
But this is a big country, and there are millions of people who believe that infidels have no right to say anything in any way that they consider offensive to Islam, and they certainly don't believe in equality among the various faiths.
And as a country, the trajectory of that country is not good. It's moving in the wrong
trajectory
direction.
Over the years that I've been going has been down, down, down. I really can't say I'm eager to go back.
Yeah. Cliff May, thank you so much for joining us, and I appreciate your advocacy for Asiya Bibi.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, coming up next, the nation is paying tribute and saying goodbye to the 41st President of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, who passed away on Friday. When we return, we'll talk with FRC's Ken Blackwell, who worked in his administration. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect. Is Planned Parenthood a champion for women? In reality, Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading killer of unborn children. Despite this, they have been hailing themselves as the voice of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities today, their scandals continue to pile up. Planned Parenthood's current motto is care, no matter what. A more fitting motto would be profit, no matter what. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood. Again, that's frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Well, it is not only the passing of a president, but the passing of an era. When George H.W. Bush passed away on Friday night at the age of 94, he was the last president of the World War II generation. And while politics are usually set aside to celebrate the memory of our nation's leaders, this is a new era where partisanship knows no limits. Joining us now is Ken Blackwell. He served under Bush 41 as the HUD Undersecretary and U.S. Ambassador to the UN Human Rights Commission. And he is now a senior fellow here at the Family Research Council. Ken, good to have you back here on Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Good to be with you, sir.
You know, his death was announced by his office came less than 8 months after that of his wife, Barbara Bush. They had been married for 73 years. It really is the end of an era, as we have known it, in terms of our leaders going back to World War II. But also we see a new strain of partisanship that will not even cease for a moment when it comes to celebrating the life of a leader.
Well, that's unfortunate because George Bush, President 41, was a true American patriot who lived his life in the service of others. He was the same exact age as my father, who was also a World War II vet. And I was always struck over the years by President Bush's generosity of spirit, and it was evident in his personal handwritten notes and unscheduled telephone calls to check on you and your family. He was a world leader who didn't spend a lot of time cursing the darkness. He preferred to light candles, and that was the genesis of his Thousand Points of Light initiative. But you're right, Tony. Things have gotten much more sharp, and where, you know, and his generation, partisan politics ended at the water's edge. But that is not the case anymore, unfortunately, and I'm not sure how we get back there. But perhaps in this moment of celebrating his life, his accomplishments, you know, his his living the American dream with dignity, maybe we can figure out how to get back to a point where we start to do things for the American people in a a more bipartisan nature where possible. You know, look, he was not unrealistic. He understood that Michael Dukakis wanted to beat him. He understood that he was in a race with Bill Clinton. But his spirit, his personality was such that once that fight was over, he looked for ways that he could make a contribution. I'm not sure that that's the case anymore.
No, and I had the opportunity. I didn't work with him like you did, but I had a chance to meet him. My first major interview as a TV reporter back in the early 90s was with his wife, Barbara Bush. They're very decent people, nice people. Certainly, I would take issue with some of his politics. He wasn't as conservative as I would like. But what I find amazing is that because people are saying nice things about him, which they should, he was a decent man, a very decent man. He represents what's good about America. But you have some on the left, you know, now claiming he's a racist and making sure that his reputation does not remain intact when he goes into the grave. And I find that, I mean, I never saw anything about his administration that would suggest in any form or fashion that he was racist.
Oh, no, absolutely not. If you knew President Bush, you knew that his first instinct was to appeal to the better angels and others. He was a guy who embraced and he told me. I mean, he was a guy who embraced what Martin Luther King said in 1960 when King said, "We are all heirs to the legacy of worthiness." Now, President Bush didn't like the L word. He didn't like to talk about legacy, but he understood what Dr. King was talking about there. And he understood that respect discovers the dignity of others. And he lives his life that way. And, Tony, as you and I try to do day in and day out, President Bush loved God. He cherished his family.
Yes, he did.
And he, in fact, loved America. And it was in that love, in those veins of love, that I think a life of was in our presence that made a difference. And I would agree with you. You know, I always agree with his policy initiatives. He probably didn't embrace. I mean, he was not a movement conservative. He was an establishment conservative. You know, but he always strived to do the right thing. And I can tell he never with Clarence Thomas, for instance. I remember I was in Geneva at that time, and he just wouldn't turn his back on Clarence, and he hung in there and got him confirmed, and now he's a great conservative justice on the bench.
Certainly an example of one of his greatest contributions to the country, and he did many. He did many, but Clarence Thomas is certainly at the top of the list. As is Ken Blackwell, who was a part of that administration as well. Ken Blackwell, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. It's always good to be with you, and it's just a delight to work with you day in and day out.
All right. Thanks, brother. Ken Blackwell, senior fellow here at the Family Research Council. When we come back, we're going to be going to the phone lines. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this message.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect. Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women. From aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer to these questions should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, claiming they are ineffective and harmful. But are they? Studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. To find out more, visit frc.org/SOCE.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. It just doesn't seem right to interrupt Bing Crosby as he's singing. But I actually listen to him all the time. I like that kind of music. Speaking of a different era. All right, let's go. I'm going to go to the phone lines. This is what I want to talk about today. 866-372-7234. We were talking earlier with Cliff May, former commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, about Asiya Bibi, Pakistani woman who was charged and convicted of blasphemy, sentenced to death, spent 8 years mostly in solitary confinement. The Supreme Court overturned that decision, but she's still in prison. They can't release her because the radicals there. Pakistan has gotten really bad. As Cliff was saying, it's moving in the wrong direction rapidly. And it's really been that way since the early 90s with the Afghan war. After that, I mean, it was just progressing downward rapidly. But anyway, the family has applied for asylum first in Britain, in the UK. They rejected it. They've been in discussions with Canada, and they've also appealed to the United States. Do you think that the United States should grant asylum to Asiya Bibi? Would you like to see them do that? 866-372-7234. Let me know what you think. 866-372-7234. Should the U.S. grant that request? And, you know, as Cliff was saying, juxtaposing that to what's happening there on the border, the southern border, where people are, these migrant caravans coming in saying they want asylum. Now, the big difference, just for those who say, well, you're being duplicitous, you're being hypocritical here, because you are saying that you should allow someone like Asiya Bibi come into the country, but not those coming from Central and South America. Now, first of all, we know that there are others in those groups that are not from Central and South America. We also know that those coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, many of those escaping bad situations that are not the result of government persecution or the government failing to protect them. It's because they have a societal breakdown. Crime is bad down there, granted. But not everyone who is in a crime-ridden neighborhood has a right to come to the United States. So what do you think? 866-372-7234. I'm going to go back. Well, some of you are calling in. I want to go back to this for a moment, this issue on the Saudi textbooks. This is a really, really significant issue. And the fact that the Saudis are not making progress, in fact, they've slipped back to really the quality of these, or the intolerance in the textbooks that were present in the early part of 2000, right after 9/11, when they first looked at these things, and they were supposed to be reforming them, and now they're getting worse. Now, there was a study back in 2013 by the State Department. It was a two-part study of the Saudi textbooks that was commissioned by the State Department and conducted by the International Center for Religion and Diplomacy, which is a Washington research group. It was finished in 2013. It took a while to do, but it was finished in 2013, but it was never released for fear of angering Saudi officials. Now, I do not agree with everything the administration has done on Saudi Arabia. I think we play too nice with them. And I know they're a key ally in lining up with Iran and all of that. But one of the things that they don't have on us that they used to is we're becoming energy independent. And that's one of the big things they held over our head. And by the way, the money, I made reference to this, but the money that they have been using to build these madrasas with these Islamic schools, a lot of them they built in Afghanistan leading up to the 9/11 attacks, and then providing these textbooks has been funded. They didn't have any money prior to really the 1970s and the when OPEC, all that came together. We had the energy crisis and gas prices went up. Well, that just flooded their coffers with money, and this is how they've been using it. Now, here's just a very, very quickly. I'm going to go to the phone lines. Lance, hang on there. I'm coming to you first there in Nebraska. This was from the New York Times. They obtained, actually, by a Freedom of Information Act, the report that the State Department did not release. And we're finding very similar things in the USERF report. But he, quoting from this article, seventh graders were being taught that fighting the infidels to elevate the words of Allah was among the deeds Allah loved the most, is what the report found, among dozens of passages it found troubling. Tenth graders learned that Muslims who abandoned Islam should be jailed for 3 days, and if they did not change their minds, killed for walking away from their true religion. Fourth graders read that non-Muslims had been shown the truth but abandoned it, like the Jews, or had replace truth with ignorance and delusion like the Christians. Now, some would say, well, you know, that's what they believe. Christians believe, you know, they want to teach their kids things. True. And I'm not opposed to them teaching their kids, but they're teaching their kids to kill people, that they have no dignity, no right to life. Christianity doesn't teach that. It may teach that we have different views, but everyone is valued, and you're to love your enemy, not kill them. But this is being promoted literally around the globe still today. I think it's time to address this issue. All right. I go back to Asiya Bibi, the Pakistani woman who is still being held in Pakistan for her own safety now, that even though the charges have been dropped. 866-372-7234. Excuse me, phone lines are full. Let's go to Lance in Lincoln, Nebraska. Lance, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks, Tony, for taking my call. I really appreciate you, Tony, just reporting accurately on these issues. Anyway, my answer to your question, should she be given asylum? Of course, absolutely. In the U.S., I think that's really important. My only concern would be if she's given asylum, which she needs to be by the U.S., you know, of course, there's probably going to be this mob violence because, you know, as you're reporting and your guests have reported it so dangerous for believers in some of these Muslim-dominated countries. So I think, you know, there's probably going to be some kind of retaliation if she and her family come to the U.S. and believers are going to be, you know, persecuted or killed potentially. So, I mean, I think, yes, she should be given asylum. I just am concerned for believers and the repercussions of her being given asylum in the U.S.
In Lance, that is an extremely valid point, because that is actually, that's what we see happening even now. And it's the reports we get, and I actually did not see, I'm fairly well read when it comes to the news. I didn't see these reports of what's happening in places like Pakistan and India. By the way, India is just as bad, where there is, in fact, we're looking at this now, very concerned about the use of social media and how that platform is used to spread false information, and as a result creates this like flash mobs that will attack and literally burn entire Christian towns and villages when, you know, someone is said that to have committed blasphemy against the prophet or done something to a Quran. So you're absolutely right. Reason to be concerned. But unfortunately, Lance, what's happening, most Christians have left those countries. They're leaving. And that's
right.
Problematic because that, as long as there was some significant Christian community or other religious minority communities, it provided a stabilizing force. But they're being pushed out rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Lance, thanks so much for the call. Good insight. And you are correct. It is a concern. And folks, this is one of the reasons we need to be praying for believers around the world, because many of them are too impoverished to be able to leave these very dangerous situations. And, you know, the United States cannot be a police force everywhere. We cannot go into these countries and ensure that they protect their own people. But we can leverage our foreign aid, our relationships with these countries, leaning on them to ensure that they are protecting the religious freedom of their people. And that's the main mission of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, is to report this so the administration, the Congress, the State Department is aware of it and is held accountable to take actions to do something, because this is a stated priority for the United States in our foreign policy. All right, let's go to Rhonda in Mississippi. Rhonda, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. I would just like to say that I think the Pakistani lady deserves asylum before anybody else, because she's being persecuted because of her religion and her stance. And as far as the people that are coming to the border, I feel like those people need to stay in their own country and change their own governments and quit running away from their problems to build themselves up. They have the right to worship if they want to. She doesn't. Her government's going to suppress her.
Very good point, Rhonda. Thank you so much for the call. And this is a clear case. This is why we have asylum provisions, where those that are being persecuted for their beliefs, for whether they be political beliefs or religious beliefs, they can appeal to the United States. And clearly this is a case that meets the criteria. Let's go to Michael in Texas. Michael, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, for taking my call. I appreciate it. I agree wholeheartedly with all the points that you've brought up on how actually dangerous this is, not only to the people involved, Christians involved, but to the world as a whole. I think the first thing we need to do is possibly put a ban on the 200,000 Saudi children that are sent over here every year for the United States to educate them.
So you're talking about the Saudi textbook issue.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it plays hand in hand with the lady needing asylum. Why does she need asylum? Because she spoke her piece. And Muslims worldwide do not allow this to happen if it doesn't agree with their poison.
Right.
And unfortunately, the United States, we are becoming more and more involved with it. We have that same problem right here in the States. I hope that everyone doesn't stick their head in the sand and think, no, this problem is not here.
Michael, let me along those lines, let me tell you something that I just experienced when I was in the United Arab Emirates last month, meeting with various governmental leaders all the way up to the Crown Prince. And one of them, I don't recall exactly which one, I have to go back to my notes and look, but it was one of the top leaders, and it was shocking to me that they made the comment that they had a son who they didn't really have tight control on, and he was 18 going off to college, and it's very common for those in that part of the world, as you pointed out, to come here as students to the United States, to go to our colleges. He did not want him to come to the United States because he was fearful that he would become radicalized here in the United States.
My goodness.
Because, I said, I got to find out more about this. And in part, it was because of the mosque that he would attend. And those mosques, about 80%, if I recall correctly, in the United States, funded by the Saudis and have the materials from the Saudis. And that's leading to the radicalization of Muslims that are coming from other tolerant, more tolerant countries here to the United States for higher education. That is shocking.
Why do we tolerate this?
We've got to get a handle on it. There's no question. I mean, obviously, you know, in a country that puts a top priority on the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech, you know, it becomes very difficult to navigate. But when we see people and entities like Saudi Arabia funding these entities and this material designed to take down non-Islamic countries, we have to take a stand. It's time to do something. Michael, thank you so much for the call, Michael.
Thank you.
Folks, I was disturbed by what I've seen and what I've heard, because I've had other leaders, and I'm not going to go into all the Islamic countries, but in those, there are, I'm going to tell you right now, there are Muslims that want to pursue a path of tolerance and moderation and do not, and I should say, are not represented by the radical Islamist and are fearful of what's happening as a result of what Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabi strain of Islam is doing. And they're asking the United States for help. By all means, I think we should help them. All right, folks, sorry we're out of time. I did not get to all the calls, but Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you'll join us. This is an issue we're going to continue to talk about. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.